Like many before him, Tony Romeo, a pilot and former Air Force officer in the US, has been fascinated by the disappearance of Amelia Earhart. In 1937, while attempting to become the first woman pilot to circle the globe, her plane disappeared over the South Pacific, never to be seen again. Tony, unlike many of us, had the means to sate his curiosity. He sold his South Carolina commercial property company and poured the proceeds, millions of dollars, into setting up an underwater exploration company. At the end of January, after 90 days at sea, scanning over 5,000 square miles, their sonar picked up what Tony believes to be the missing plane. Tony Romeo is with us from London. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Catherine. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Great to have you with us. How confident are you that what you've discovered is Amelia Earhart's missing plane?
We feel really good about it. You'd be really hard-pressed to look at the data and convince us that it was anything otherwise. We've discovered this target in an area that's very sandy, very flat. So to see anything protruding above the seafloor in that area would be very unusual. The dimensions of the target and some of the unique characteristics that we see in the sonar image are very, very instructive as to what we're looking at. It's definitely a plane. You know, it could be, you know, other folks have suggested it could be another plane, maybe a Japanese plane. That is possible, although very unlikely, but we feel really good about it.
What? Just explain what you've seen, by the way, because I understand that visually you haven't seen the plane itself yet. Describe what the images that you have and how you got it.
Sure. So the image was taken from a Hugin 6000, which is an underwater, an autonomous underwater vehicle, AUV. It goes all the way down to the bottom of the ocean, flies about 50 meters above the seafloor, just like a drone does in the air. And it uses a sonar. It shoots out acoustic waves in the water to both sides of the torpedo-like object, and they come back and it paints an image basically of what it sees. And the object that we got back was very close in dimensions to what Amelia's plane was, which was about 12 by 18 meters. 18 meters was the wingspan, 12 meters was the fuselage. And so what we see is an object that's sitting on the seabed that's up about 2 to 3 meters, pretty much the right height for a for the fuselage of the aircraft, and then twin vertical stabilizers in the back. And that was a very unique characteristic of her plane and not a lot of other aircraft. And then you see wings that proportion are very close to the nose aircraft, which is very similar to what her aircraft looked like. So you're correct. We have not taken pictures when we were there. The color camera on our AUV was actually broken. And we had spares for a lot of different parts of the AUV. The color Cathex camera was not one of them that we had, which is about $150,000 part. We scrambled, we tried calling folks. We wanted to get one hand delivered out to American Samoa. In the end, we just got it actually this week. So it's finally being replaced, but, that's what we have.
What depth is it at?
It's, right about 5,000 meters deep.
Okay. And looking at the sonar image, if it is the plane, shows it being fairly well intact. What does that suggest about what might have happened?
Yeah, those last few moments of the flight must have been incredible. You can imagine they'd been flying for about 20 hours. They lost the island for whatever reason, and the engines sputter and go out. You can imagine just it was so loud in the plane that her and Fred Noonan, there's two of them in the plane, they couldn't talk to each other, so they were scribbling notes on pieces of paper and handing them back and forth. And so those engines sputter and go out, and then for a few moments, it's just silence. Their ears would have been ringing after that long flight. And certainly looked at each other and realized that was probably this was it. And they were going into the water. She would have pointed the airplane into the wind to try to slow the plane down even more. She might have put down her flaps. And then she would have landed it as gently as she could into the water. We believe, you know, unlike a lot of air disasters that happen over the water, this was not a spiral descent or a hard impact with the ocean. It would have been a very nice glide and probably a pretty smooth landing. Who knows how she hit the waves, but pretty smooth landing on the water. So we calibrated our sonar to look for an object that fit that 12 by 18 meter size. We weren't looking for debris, and we knew if the plane had come apart, the engines and everything had fallen off, then we weren't going to find it because we were not looking for objects that small.
It's consistent, isn't it, with what you've just said, that rather than it being something catastrophic, she ran out of fuel, landed.
That's right.
And
that's
then
right.
The plane sunk. Yeah. Right. And does this, right. this, if this, again, if this is the plane and this is the location, do you have a theory on what happened, why this happened?
So we believe that we found her in an area that we refer to as the Dateline Theory area, that as they were flying towards the island, navigationally, they did not set the clocks back a day. Her navigator was using celestial navigation. And as they took off on July 2nd, they didn't back the calendars up one day. And that would have thrown their navigation off a little bit using the angle of the stars and the suns that they were shooting. So that's a theory that we consider, and we think there's some veracity to it. Other folks have disagreed with that. You know, it's hard to say what the mistake was. They didn't arrive at the island. We know that. So clearly something went wrong. Some folks have said that the island was plotted 6 miles off on her chart. So she actually was flying to the wrong, which 6 miles doesn't sound like a lot, but you can't see a plane from 6 miles. You certainly can't hear it. Generally can't hear it. Not that kind of plane anyway. So 6 miles could have been enough for them to miss it. You know, you add in some other factors. They were behind due to the winds and other things. So, I mean, they were close. We know that from the radio, the strength of the radio calls that came in. So we know that they were close to the island. Nobody ever saw them, that, you know, the folks that were there on the island waiting. Nobody saw them on another island nearby. So we're not sure, but we know they were close.
What happens now to try and prove this? Will you go back with that camera? What would it take to get it over the line?
Yeah, I think that's the next step. You know, we got to go back maybe with different equipment. We talked about going back with an RV, taking good pictures, seeing how it's sitting in the sand, and then based on what we see, engineer a solution to you know, slowly raise the plane. You know, we believe strongly that this you know, the aircraft needs to be brought home. She wants to, you know, she would want to be brought home, I'm sure. The plane deserves a place at the Smithsonian. And you know, as much as possible, honor her legacy. She was truly an American icon, an American hero. We want to do everything we can to honor that.
It's deeper than the Titanic, though, this, isn't it? By quite some distance.
Yeah, 4,500 feet.
Mm. Why spend millions of your own money doing this, Tony?
Well, so I think you actually described it right during the intro. Some of the agencies have misreported it and said we spent $11 million on this, which is not accurate. I got out of commercial real estate. The high interest rates, high inflation, COVID, all that kind of made me think that real estate trends were changing. And I think it's a large part. I was probably right about that a couple of years ago. So I decided to try something a little bit more adventurous. You know, the idea was to start a deep sea exploration company, as you explained at the beginning. And then we set aside a little bit over a million, million and a half or so for an expedition to start the company by going to search for Amelia Earhart. So it's not true to say we spent $11 million on it. I spent about $1.5 million on this search.
So you've got a commercial company and a high profile search to start it. Okay. Okay. Again, if correct, why do you think you've got there where so many have failed? Is the kit getting more sophisticated? Were there areas you could just rule out because they'd already been searched? Why do you think you're this close?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the part of it is a lot of the stuff we've heard over the years about Amelia Earhart, they were not serious attempts to find the plane. They were stories and folks bought into them. There was a theory about her. She was a spy for the spying on the Japanese, may have flown to Marshall Islands. There has been no evidence, shred of evidence supporting that. Evidence presented that she flew to another island, may have been a castaway. Again, they're just sort of ridiculous stories and zero evidence to support them. And so it's kind of given this impression that there's, you know, there's this constant searching for Amelia Earhart, when the actuality is to do a real search and search the bottom of the ocean around Howland Island where she was flying. It was very difficult. I mean, it was very logistically very difficult to get to and very expensive. And there's only been four or five real attempts at doing so. You know, that surprised us as well, because I think there is this perception that there's been all these groups out there looking. But, you know, once you kind of move all the kind of the frivolous, ridiculous attempts and stories aside, really the real efforts have been, I don't think we're directed in the right area. So when we found out, kind of when we took a look at the evidence and we kind of looked at where the other groups had searched, we said, well, there's some gaps in areas out in the ocean there that should still be searched. And so that gave us a lot of confidence that we were going to have a good shot at this. Yeah, I mean, the story of Amelia is wonderful. I love a lot of the stories that have come out over the years that she assumed a new identity and lived out, some life in New Jersey. Some folks that say, I got an email from the Flat Earth Society saying that she was underneath the earth. She was still lost underneath the, I mean, there's such a
Are they
lore of
still
crazy. You
going?
see,
Fantastic.
yeah, and you're seeing the same thing start to happen now with MH370, right? The more that this goes on. Yeah, and it does, and it hasn't been solved. Now it's like, well, Malaysia was at war with Russia, right? In the new Netflix series, which is just, it's just kind of some of it gets to be a little bit absurd. But it's, until the plane is found, and this goes for anything, the ocean has this way of just creating mysteries, right? And
Yes.
anything you find at the bottom of the ocean becomes a wonderful story. I mean,
It also preserves, Tony. It's a little bit like the wonderful discovery of Shackleton's Endeavour. It's
That's
very
right.
well
Yep.
preserved because it's at a depth and in conditions where it doesn't sort of get eaten to bits, you know? It's extraordinary
That's right.
what can be found. Just finally, I'm interested in your insights. You mentioned you got out of the commercial property business because you were seeing changes ahead in the market. What were they, Tony? What were the changes?
Yeah, in the US, and I think New Zealand was probably similar. Certainly Australia was, and a lot of the rest Western world. You saw, interest rates go up as a response in inflation, high inflation. I was in office real estate, so that's I can't speak to all commercial real estate, but I started seeing some things that were really a long time coming. The office market really was overbuilt. You had decades of low interest rates, and that just caused builders to go out and kind of overbuild. And then you had you had COVID, and you had a work from home trend that was, already happening before COVID, but COVID just accelerated all of it. And so you had all these sort of factors kind of working against office real estate. And I was at a moment where everything that I had was completely occupied, was with no vacancies. And this is a good moment for me to kind of step aside and see what happens. And
Go
I
and
think personally, I feel.
set up my dream job. Yeah, good
What's
on you.
that?
Go and set up your dream job.
Absolutely, 100%. And
Yeah.
so we've got, yeah, this is, I feel like a little kid again on Treasure Hunt. So it's fun. It's also, but it's very challenging. It's the marine industry has it's such a there's so many unique kind of problems you have to solve that you don't deal with real estate and land-based sort of industry. So it's been fun. I've learned a lot, and we've got some exciting projects we should be announcing here in the next hopefully the next few weeks that should be should
All
be
right.
exciting too.
You need to finish the job here, though. So let's know when you do, and prove it one way or the other. Thank you, Tony Romeo.